third case this morning, which is United States v. Jones.
Good morning, Your Honor. I'm Attorney John Maximovich, and I'm representing the appellant Dirk Jones in this direct appeal from a conviction for conspiracy to provide false information to a licensed firearms dealer in order to deceptively purchase a firearm and transfer it to an Indiana non-resident in violation of Title 18, Section 371, 922A5 and 922A6. This case basically is very fact-specific and fact-intensive. Jones was a twice-convicted heroin addict and an Indiana resident. He was searching for a way to get to Chicago to purchase heroin from a regular supplier. And that regular supplier was located at 2920 South State Street in Chicago. He more or less induced Mr. Rock, who had a car, to transport him to this location so that he could get heroin. On the way to Chicago to procure heroin, Mr. Rock, who had previously stopped at a sporting goods store and placed a $200 down payment on a semi-automatic rifle, returned and stopped at the sporting goods store to complete the transaction, to pay the balance of the purchase price and pick up the rifle. Mr. Jones accompanied Mr. Rock into the sporting goods store. All the while this transaction and their actions were being surveilled by the ATF, unbeknownst to either one of them. While he was in the sporting goods store, Mr. Jones picked up the firearm, handled it, also received a conviction for felon in possession of a firearm, which we are not appealing from.
Yeah, you know, you've conceded his guilt on count three, even though the evidence of possession seems to be awfully thin. Why was that conceded?
Well, it was conceded basically, Your Honor, because there's a Seventh Circuit case directly on point, United States versus Lane, where the court ruled that just merely holding a firearm because of the nature of a firearm constitutes possession. Having to face that precedent head on, it was my opinion that it would not be a worthy issue to appeal. In the lower court, in the district court, when I made my motion for judgment of acquittal, I stressed that there was no way that firearm could be fired. It was not loaded. Obviously, a sporting goods store takes precautions so that guns are not fired within its premises. However, it got nowhere, and knowing what the Seventh Circuit case law is, I didn't feel that it was a wise thing to do or would be productive to appeal it. So I left that as it was.
Your client testified that he was experiencing withdrawal.
Yes, Your Honor. He testified that he was experiencing withdrawal and was rather eager to get to his source of supply in Chicago.
But was it 3 hours before they arrived at the projects on State Street?
Your Honor, that's accurate and correct. After they left West Forest, they didn't go directly to Chicago. They made three stops in Gary, Indiana, one for oil, one at an apartment building, and one at a restaurant, where apparently Rock ate. Jones testified that he was too sick to eat, and then they proceeded on I-90, the toll road, to State Street. which indicates they certainly did not go directly from the sporting goods store to get the heroin. However, Jones was more or less at the mercy or the whim of Mr. Rock, because it was his car, and he was more or less the passenger. However, all the while they were being followed by the ATF. When they arrived at 2920 State Street, they parked the car. Rock parked the car in front of the building. Jones got out alone, went into the building, located his heroin supplier, purchased $19 worth of heroin, testified that he snorted it in the building, and proceeded to leave the building. While he was in the building, Rock got out of the car, went around to the back, to the trunk where the boxed semi-automatic rifle and ammunition was located, and started to open the trunk. However, he had to open the trunk with the screwdriver because it had a broken lock. He opened the lid of the trunk, and as he was reaching in, ATF agents arrested him. The box never got out of the trunk. It never left the trunk. They immediately arrested Rock, and as Jones came out of the apartment building, excuse me, they arrested him also. ATF agent O'Malley testified that he did not go into the premises to try to locate an intended purchaser. More or less took the two down to the police station, wherever that is located in Chicago. Immediately released Jones, released Rock's car to Jones, and what I thought was, unusual was not until 17 months later was Jones indicted for that offense. That seems to be a pretty long time to wait. Looking at all the evidence that was introduced at the trial, there was no evidence whatsoever that Jones in any way lied, misrepresented, or tried to provide any kind of false information to West Force. Rock paid for the gun, selected the gun, filled out Treasury Form 4473. In fact, had a gun permit, and as ATF agent O'Malley testified, could legally purchase the gun, and even testified at trial that at that time he didn't feel he had probable cause to arrest Rock or Jones, either one. But they were very interested in what Mr. Rock was doing with that gun, because he had made multiple purchases of firearms previously. Matter of fact, the very day before, June 19th, and then once a few months prior to that. So that sort of got the ATF interested in Mr. Rock. However, there was all the evidence which could be put together and used to convict Mr. Jones was circumstantial, and it truly seems that any inference that could be drawn from that circumstantial evidence, it could just as easily bend that Mr. Jones, who doesn't really have... Well, he had the choice of picking his friends. However, he picked the wrong friend. He was just doing exactly what he testified that he was doing, attempting to get to Chicago to get heroin. He is from Chicago. His two prior convictions were in Cook County, and that's where he always purchased his heroin. And I see my time is running up, so if there are any questions, I'll answer them.
Thank you, Mr. Maksimovich. Pinnage.
Good morning. Ruth Pinnage for the government, Your Honor.
like to focus on Mr. Jones's burden in this appeal, which is very heavy. The test for sufficiency of the evidence is set forth in Jackson versus Virginia.
And I think we're familiar with the standards. I would like you to tell me what evidence established the crucial link between Jones and Rock's plan to resell the rifle in Chicago. What evidence do you have of that?
It's a theory, Your Honor, and we've argued in the brief that the linkage between the pieces of evidence is not a stretch and not beyond any logic. First of all, Mr.
Well, you got
it, Jones.
I'd like to hear it because I wasn't convinced by the brief.
Okay. Jones went into the gun store, and it's very clear from the video that he not only went in, but he was examining the rifle which was purchased.
Oh, okay, he's a shopper.
Right.
Shopper, again, you need the linkage, I think, altogether. Shopping quite extensively, looking very closely, taking the magazine out. He's claimed, by the way, he was a bystander. The video shows he was not a bystander.
I've walked into Tiffany's a lot of times and asked them to show me a bracelet.
Well,
I've touched the bracelet.
Right. If you want to go to the end of the story and look at his testimony, he claims he went in just to make sure that Mr. Rock didn't spend too much time in the store. He was suffering the heroin withdrawal pain. And you look at the video, which went on for about 20 minutes or more, he's laughing, joking, smoking, looking at not only the rifle that was bought, but another handgun that it was in the case. So he's actively involved. We believe the jury easily could have determined that he was actively involved in the purchase. Mr. Jones also indicated when he testified that he knew that Mr. Rock was legally able to purchase a firearm. He admitted that he was a felon. He claimed that he thought that meant he just couldn't own one, not possess one. He also stated in his testimony that he had not been in to that store for about 5 years, and when he was in there before he was to buy worms, but Mr. Williams, the sales clerk, testified that he recognized Mr. Jones. The sales clerk did say Jones had not purchased from him, but Mr. Williams had only been working at the store for 3 years, and he recognized Jones. Next, the video clearly shows, and the agent watching through the window, that Mr. Jones picked the package rifle up that had the magazine on the top, carried it out of the store, and put it in the trunk. Then both gentlemen drive around Gary for a period of time, head up to Chicago. The next linkage is what happened when they reached the project in Chicago. Mr. Rock parks the car. They're being surveilled by several ATF agents. Mr. Jones walks into the front door of the project building, and within a few moments of that, Mr. Rock is going around to the trunk of the car, opening the trunk, trying to take out a package, which turned out later to be the rifle. At that point, Agent O'Malley gave the takedown signal, and he indicated in his testimony why he just made the decision to do the takedown of Mr. Rock at that time. The sequencing was very important to Mr. Jones's conviction because almost as soon as he goes in the front door, Mr. Rock's going to the trunk, all that is strong evidence that they were working together to sell that gun that they have purchased, we say, earlier in the project. And then what happens next is also important. Mr. Jones testified that when he was in the projects, he went in, found his heroin, snorted it up, was in there for I don't know how long that would take. Then he comes out of the building. According to the agents, there were only a few minutes that transpired. Only a few minutes went by. They get Rock arrested by the trunk, and then Jones is coming out of the building. Hardly enough time to find somebody to supply him with the heroin. I think he indicated that his regular supplier wasn't in the hallway, so he had to go out someplace to buy it, then he goes back to snort it. That would take, we say, more than a few minutes.
but then also what happened next is extremely important. Joan saw the agent surrounding Ron. He goes out a side door, not the front door. And also Agent O'Malley testified that he saw 7 or 8 men with him, with Joan. So Agent O'Malley did testify he wasn't sure if those men were with Joan. But when you wrap it all together, that evidence, which is circumstantial but easily grasped, then you don't need very many inferences. And we believe that the jury drew proper inferences, logical inferences, didn't put a whole bunch of inferences upon inferences to reach their finding of guilt. Back to the burden, the defendant, we believe, is asking this court to go look at the credibility again, and that's not the role of this court on review. Once there is a verdict, under the sufficiency test, the court must look at the inferences also in the light most favorable to the government.
You only have a bit of time, but I have concerns about the statement from Rock that was read to the jury. There seems to be a rather glaring confrontation clause problem with the admission of that statement. And would you be comfortable responding? I realize that, you know, the issue wasn't raised in the brief. But it's too important.
If you could elaborate, I might feel comfortable answering.
Well, the district court stated that it was basing Jones's sentence, at least in part, on Rock's post-arrest statement, and the Supreme Court has found that statements by an accomplice that incriminate a criminal defendant are presumptively unreliable. What would make this statement reliable? How could the district court have reasonably relied on it? At that point, you've got Rock trying to shift blame away from himself.
I mean, I'm not sure I
understand. Post-arrest statement is what I'm
saying. Yeah, and I'm not sure I'm keying into Your Honor's question in terms of corroborating Rock's statement that was used.
I just have enormous concerns about the statement from Rock that was read to the jury.
It did come in, and it was...
It did, but it should not have. It's a confrontation clause problem.
And I'm sorry, Your Honor, I'm not really able to answer your question. It was not raised in the brief. We did not brief that issue.
Right.
A portion of the statement that did reference to Mr. Jones was redacted. Properly.
Can you think of any theory that it should have been admitted? Just offhand, I recognize you.
Mr. Rock's statement?
Yes. Before the
wouldn't be here. It was his statement. He was charged as a co-conspirator. In the statement, he's saying that previously he had purchased as a straw purchaser guns. He says he was working with a fellow by the name of Vino, who you might assume is different from Mr. Rock, but I believe it was introduced to show that there was a prior history of Mr. Rock delivering firearms to Illinois residents. In fact, delivering them to projects that were, I think, about 5 blocks away from where he ended up with Rock. So it's my understanding, reading the transcript, that was the main purpose for admitting it. It was to show this previous sale, Rock's previous straw purchases. Granted, that was another individual.
Do you know this because you reviewed the record? Was a limiting instruction given by the court that this should only be admissible against Rock?
I think I reviewed that, Your Honor, but I'm sorry, I'm blanking out right now as to whether there was
some briefing on that.
We'd be happy to respond. Are there any other questions from the court?
Thank you, Ms. Hennigan.
Thank you.
Maksimovich.
If I may, very, very briefly, I think it's significant that when Mr. Jones came out of 2920 South State Street and was arrested, he was searched, and he had no money on him, no cell phone on him, no drugs on him, and no gun on him. And it would seem to me that if Mr. Jones had went into that apartment building to locate a prospective purchaser for that rifle, that he would have had a cell phone or some money or a gun for protection or some of those items, and he had none. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Maksimovich. I think both Judge Rovner and Judge Williams would like some additional briefing on the admission of the statement by Mr. Rock, and the court will give will issue an order indicating that for both sides to do it. Thank you to both. Mr. Maksimovich, again, thank you for your appointment, and representing counsel. We'll look forward to the briefs on that issue.